Let's go through every single package installed with a Linux install image. I'm going through the software included with Slackware, but these are all open source applications and libraries, so whether you're running Slackware like me, or Fedora, Debian, BSD, or even Mac or Windows, you can probably download, install, and try these on your computer. So chances are, you'll be able to learn something from this podcast. Let's get started. Can you imagine writing software and coming up to the point where you have to write some conversion of measurement? Whether it's you've written your software initially in inches and then you realize everyone else is using centimeters. You are using Fahrenheit and you realize everyone else is using Celsius. You're using a certain format of your date and time and so on. So imagine writing that and thinking, oh, now I better write that conversion code. Even if you do the bare minimum, like just the obvious ones that I've just mentioned, you've already done too much. And what's worse is you've done too much and yet you haven't done everything. You've done too much, but you forgot to also convert into picas and pixels and whatever, millimeters and centimeters and whatever else. So, or, you know, and Fahrenheit, Celsius, and why leave out Kelvin? So you're simultaneously not doing enough and doing too much. And I say you're doing too much because someone else, you know, someone else has done that. That's code that's already been written, right? Like someone else in the history of computing, probably the recent history of computing, has written that code. And so it kind of seems silly for you to waste your time writing that code yourself. I mean, unless I guess you want to, but even then there's an argument, honestly. Even if you want to, there's an argument that you shouldn't. I mean, sure, do it as an exercise. But when you grab a library that already exists to do a thing, a lot of times it's better to use that library because it has been written. There's probably been a lot of bugs detected in it and fixed in it. And so now you are just reusing it and you don't even have to maintain it really. Someone finds a bug in it, you file a bug to the project, to the library, or you fix it in the library. You push it, they merge it, everyone in the world gets that fix, or, you know, someone else has done that and now you're getting a fix. So this is the idea, obviously, of open source software, but specifically in this context, it's also part of the power of a desktop environment, of a framework, and the KDE 5 framework has something called K-Unit Conversion, which does exactly what I've just described. It's a library that exists with a bunch of conversion code so that if you are writing something within the KDE framework, using the KDE framework tools, then you can just import KUnit conversion or include it. And suddenly you've got all this code for free. And I say that a lot, you know, I've said that a lot during the review of the KDE framework and of other libraries probably, but I feel like this one specifically illustrates it in such a familiar sense. Like we've all had that application, not that we've necessarily written, but surely you've seen something in a preference dialog box, a settings box somewhere where you have to choose what's your preferred, you know, unit of measure. Like do you prefer to see things in inches or centimeters or millimeters, or do you prefer to get your date? Actually, I should check before I keep going on about date, whether this actually covers date, because I could just be I could be throwing that in as an example frivolously. I don't recall off the top of my head if that's actually a thing that it takes care of. I can't find it. So it might not do dates. It might just do measurements like inches, centimeters, things like that. It does kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes. It does liters and gallons and things like that. And it is just a bunch of user include header files and converter init. Yeah, converter unit category and value. Okay. So header files, some CMake files, and translation files. That's it. That's what's in the package. Next up is KWallet. KWallet, you may have different feelings about depending on sort of your experience so far with KWallet. Maybe you've never seen it before. Maybe you've seen it every single time you log into your computer. KWallet, in some instances, if you haven't migrated your profile correctly, maybe, I'm not sure. I can't find the consistent reason for this, for it happening, but Sometimes KWallet gets into a state or has not been initialized. Maybe that's the thing. And so it launches every time you launch your desktop and asks you to put in your password, I think it is, or something like that. It would just always ask you to put in your password every single time you turn on your computer. And I think I lived that way for, let's just say, a year. It might not have been a year. It felt like a year. And then one day I finally thought, this cannot be right. Like something, there's got to be something that I can do to make KWallet not ask me for a password every single time I log in. And it turns out, of course, there is. I don't recall exactly what the fix was now. I mean, actually, I neither remember what the problem or the fix was. I think I either exported my current wallet as XML, made a new wallet with a new password and everything like that, and then imported the information, or I just deleted the old one and created a new one, or I just created one. I set one up because that was what it was trying to get me to do. Something like that. So in other words, if you're being plagued by KWallet reminders when you log in, launch KWallet Manager and create a wallet for yourself. This is what the Plasma desktop uses to store information that should be encrypted. And KWallet is meant to be open when you are using your Plasma desktop. So it should just open sort of magically. It should retain the information, you know, once you've logged in with your password and user, it should decrypt Wallet Manager, and it runs in the background. And when I say in the background, I mean really in the background. You can launch KWallet Manager and have it running in no, maybe that's not where it goes. Well, there's something in your little taskbar, your system tray, I think, for the wallet. But generally, it just runs way, way down in the background, interacting with whatever happens to call it. And a lot of things don't call it. I mean, some things don't interact with KWallet, and so it might be mostly a moot point for your system, quite possibly. But certainly for me, for KMail, contact, stuff like that, that gets stored in KWallet. Not all my mail and stuff, but the authentication, you know, the secrets for that, I believe, gets stored in KWallet. There's some stuff from KRFB and KRDC, and then I think some Chromium related things, although I can't determine what that is exactly. It might be from from Conqueror, because I don't believe I've run, but maybe these are old. I don't know. Who knows? It's got stuff in it, possibly not a lot, but it is a system, a sort of desktop-wide encrypted file vault, essentially, and that's a useful thing sometimes. Now, the cool thing about it, though, is that you can use it a little bit more interactively. Like I say, generally, it just kind of, it's there on your system, and it keeps track of passwords and things like that as needed, but it keeps passwords and things like that applications hand to it. Because again, Firefox, for instance, doesn't interact with KWallet, so there's nothing in there from a web browsing session. In this case, there may be with a different browser that does talk to KWallet. Now, one interesting thing about KWallet is that it is a little bit interactive. I mean, there's this KWallet Manager, and so you can go down to a wallet that you've created and open it if it's not already open. And for instance, I mean, you can create a new wallet. Just, in fact, I guess I could do that right now. I'll just do that right now. File, new wallet. I'll call it a demo wallet. And now it's going to ask for, yep, here it is. It's asking for what kind of encryption I want to use. You can use the classic Blowfish encrypted file or GPG encryption, which it says is better. So I'm going to use that anyway, because that is actually what I want to use. And then I will select the GPG key that I want to use to encrypt all of this stuff. I am prompted for my GPG key. And now I've got this demo wallet entity in my KWallet Manager. So this entry, this KWallet, this vault, it has essentially a database in it. Well, actually two databases, you might argue. There's form data with zero amounts of data in it, and then passwords with zero amounts of data in it. Because I mean, I just created this thing. So if I expand form data, then I'm looking essentially at the tables of that database. I've got passwords, maps, binary data, and unknown. I don't know what unknown is. I mean, that's the definition of unknown. But each of these tables I can add records to, except unknown. Unknown allows me to do nothing with it because I guess it's unknown. I don't know what to do with that. So there's passwords, there's maps, and binary data. I don't actually know how to add binary data, but passwords and maps are pretty straightforward. So if I right click on passwords and click new, then it gives me a prompt to give a name for my new entry. So I could put my demo password, and now I've got a new record, or I've got a record in the password table. It is form data, password, my demo password, show contents. I'll show contents. There's nothing there, but I could type password 123 and then click save. And now my password is saved within KWallet. Now I could also do something like, instead of just password, maybe I could do site colon, example.com. And then user colon clatu, and then pass colon password 123. Now I have some structured data in there, or at least delimited data. I mean, that's a structure. And maybe I could write an application that queries KWallet and pulls out a specific, you know, if I came up with a scheme for how I was naming my records in the table, then I'd be able to go to form data, passwords, you know, whatever, example.com.gpg or whatever scheme or whatever naming scheme it uses. Maps is similar and arguably maybe in some cases would even be better than what I just did, because I basically just emulated a key and value pair. And this has this maps, just like in YAML, I think I talked about YAML extensively at one point on this show. Maybe not. Maybe that was Hacker Public Radio. Anyway, in YAML, there's mappings and there are sequences. And so mappings is just, it is a key and value pair. Sequence is a list. But anyway, I digress. In KWallet, a map is a key value pair. And you'll hear about that too in programming languages. You've got hash maps and things like that. So map is a term that programmers, I guess, use to say, I'm mapping this key to this value. I don't love the term because most of us think of maps as like a thing that takes you from one place to another, more across physical space, whereas in programming it seems to be more just about assigning a value to a key. Anyway, map. I'll do the same thing. Right click, new. I'll call it my demo map. Here's my demo map. I'll show values. There's nothing here, of course, right now. I'll right click in the blank key and value entry field and do a new entry. And here I've got a key place, so I could do like site, and then I'll tab over to value and I'll put example.com. So now I've got a key of site and the value is example.com. I could do a new one. Maybe I would want to put site, because I mean, there's no way to correlate the entries to each other, so that I'm not going to do the site user pass thing. I mean, it could just be, you know, foo. Tab bar there. Now I've got two keys and one value per key. Click save, and now that is encrypted in my, or you know, it's in my wallet now, in my demo wallet. At any point, you can go to file, export as XML, or you can import as XML. You can import a whole wallet. So there are lots of options for sort of getting your data back out or switching over to this from something else, whatever you want to do. I'm going to just delete this demo wallet because I don't really need it. It's gone. That was simple. And now I've just got my normal KDE wallet, as I call it, and there's some information in it. I don't really use it directly all that much. I do find it interesting that you can, though. I could see myself using KWallet if there weren't so many other great options for that sort of functionality. I really, really love Pass, or as I think the full name is, Password Store. It is a quote-unquote Unix password command or something like that, and it is, the Pass is the actual command, but you set it up and it just stores in GPG encrypted files, flat files on your hard drive, all of the, well, anything that you want, really, but also site names, usernames, and passwords for the places that you go. With a helper application within Firefox, you can bind you can sort of let Firefox query your pass directory and autofill forms and things like that, but pass is always its own thing as well. So you can always drop over to a terminal and look in within your password store. It's a great command. If you don't use it, you should use it. But KWallet is cool too, and I didn't mean to digress away from KWallet to praise pass. It's just pass is really cool. But KWallet is pretty cool, and it's one of those things that, especially if you've got applications that actually make calls out to KWallet, it can be really, really useful. So check that out, I guess. KWallet and KWallet Manager. So actually, I guess I just talked about KWallet Manager. I meant to kind of talk about KWallet, or I should have talked about KWallet. But instead, I talked about KWallet Manager. Which, I mean, that's kind of the user-facing thing that you're going to use a lot. But KWallet itself is, like, literally KWallet. Like, if you launch KWallet and not KWallet Manager, then you get into your system settings. And this allows you to enable or disable the KWallet subsystem. So if you don't have applications that use KWallet and you feel confident that you don't have applications that want to make calls to KWallet, then you can just disable it entirely and not worry about it. But you can also, here in system settings, choose where, for instance, show the manager in the system tray, use a different wallet for local passwords versus everything on your desktop, close when it's been unused for X number of minutes, close when the last application stops using it, close when a screensaver starts, and so on. So there's some controls over sort of how comfortable you are with just running, you know, letting your encrypted vault run sort of open and unencrypted, I should say. KWallet PAM is a KWallet and PAM integration module. KWallet Manager, I've already talked about. So I think it's probably time to talk about KWave. KWave is it's basically the KDE version of Audacity. That's what I'll call it. And I have tried and tried to use KWave, and it just doesn't work. It just doesn't. It doesn't work. KWave is essentially KDE, the Plasma Desktop, well, no, the KDE project's Audacity. And saying that is just as loaded a phrase or a claim as saying that, I don't know, GIMP is open source's version of Photoshop or anything like that. Because you're immediately drawing comparison, and it's a completely unfair comparison for I think just a lot of reasons. And that's to start with, I don't know that KWave, I don't know what their project goal is. I mean, it's a sound editor, but I mean, it doesn't really strike me as an Audacity clone just written in Qt. Like that does not appear to me to be the way that they are headed. I think they have their own thing in mind. Some of it seems a little bit clunkier than Audacity. And, you know, I mean, look, let's face it. Audacity is not exactly the most, I don't know, I guess, elegant of applications. But, I mean, I have used Audacity for so long now, and I have customized the keyboard shortcuts and the layout so much that it's really, really comfortable and very, very efficient for me. I have done everything from voice recording to music recording on Audacity to obviously editing of all kinds. And it's just, I know it well. And the things that it can't do, I know about. And I work around, or I plan for. KWave, I don't know as well. And I had tried KWave back on 14.2 and couldn't even get it to stay open. I mean, it was not in a good place back at Slackware 14.2-ish. Whether or not that's just because of some quirk on my specific, I had only tried it on my desktop, really. So maybe it was just, I don't know, something with that. But it didn't go well for me then. And KWave on 15, Slackware 15, seems to be going pretty steady. I mean, it kind of seems to work. It's just that the interface isn't necessarily entirely, well, certainly not familiar, because I'm not just not used to it. But there are little things, like when you go to record something, it brings up an entirely new window to record in, and that has a volume monitor, so you kind of see what's going on. But you're in a separate space. And that feels different to how Audacity does it. It doesn't feel wrong, it just feels different. I think there are probably advantages to having a different sort of space, so like a window dedicated to just the recording settings, because you can, there's three tabs, there's a recording and a format and a source, so you can really get into like what exactly you want this recording to look like and to behave. And you can monitor like the audio buffer and things like that, and set the sample rate and the input and everything that you would want to do, really. It makes sense. It feels a little bit weirdly constraining because you can't do anything else, but I mean, I don't know, what else do you need to do while you're recording, really? The effects that it has are maybe three things. Oh, I can't click there because I'm in the recording window on K-Wave. Right, I'm recording this section, the section about K-Wave, in K-Wave. So I'm going to export it and then put it back into Audacity for the final thing, because I didn't want to have to try to do everything in K-Wave. It would just slow me down too much because I'm not used to it. But yeah, for the effects, I mean, it really only has about, I think, maybe four effects. It's got like a low band pass, a high band pass, probably something else. But yeah, there's not a whole lot. There's not like, I don't even think there's like a compressor or a gate or an equalizer of any sort or a noise remover of any sort. So it is a little bit limited in it, you know, again, compared to Audacity. I'm not even positive that it's multi-track, to be perfectly honest with you. So, you know, it isn't Audacity, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But when you first launch it and you first look at it, you're going to think, oh, this is the KDE version of Audacity. So yes, that's the right ballpark, but it is not the same game. But it works. I mean, you can record stuff, you can go in and select it and delete the parts that you don't like, you can export your sound to a format that you prefer, that you like, you can open up a sound file and edit it there. So there's plenty to do here. I don't find the keyboard shortcuts very useful. I would have to customize those heavily before I sort of felt quick on this application, I think. But I think in a pinch, this is really good, and quite possibly more than four in a pinch. It's a nice application. I'm not saying it's not a nice application. I'm just saying it isn't Audacity. So I guess I should stop saying that, because I think we've gotten that message, right? K-Wave is not Audacity. It is K-Wave. It will edit sound files. It will import sound and export, and it has a lot of cool little options and interface features that are unique to other things that I've used and kind of intrigue me. So I'm gonna monitor it. I'm gonna keep an eye on K-Wave. Not gonna switch to it. There's no reason to, honestly. There's just no reason for me to switch to it right now. But it's good to know that it's there, because you never know what's gonna happen to Audacity, really. You really don't. So it's good that K-Wave is here. I will continue to watch it carefully. And it's a neat app. So if you're sitting around thinking, I just have a little audio to edit, I don't want to have to install all of Audacity for this one little project, well, you've already got something that might work. So give it a try. That was an edit, by the way. I stumbled over what I was about to say, so I had to edit what I said, and then I continued. So if you didn't notice an edit there, that was a K-Wave edit. Pretty nice, right? Okay, that's K-Wave. Now this section has been appended to the previous section, but it wasn't appended to the same track. So it created a completely new file, because I had to essentially resume recording. And that's a little bit of a problem. At the bottom of the thing that I really like about K-Wave, the bottom of the window is the whole of your audio. That's all of your audio. So it's got basically, you know, like in how in K-Write and Kate, you have an overview of your whole document down the side of your screen, and that's your scroll bar. Well, in this, that's your horizontal scroll bar. It's really, really nice. That's what I wanted to resume recording to say. Now I'm really going to stop and go back to Audacity. Okay, I'm back in Audacity now. I'm betting you couldn't hear the difference, and that's a good thing. Like, K-Wave is perfectly serviceable. It's got, like I say, some cool little UI features. It is worth looking at. If you're really, really, really used to Audacity, though, don't throw out Audacity yet. But anyway, it is time for coffee. Let's go get some. We'll come back, talk about whatever's next. I'm back with coffee. When I say back, I really mean back. I went quite a ways for this. I went down to the local cafe, which is, I mean, to be fair, I live in a pretty small town right now, so it's only like 3 blocks away, 4 blocks away. And it's such good coffee. It's really good. So I'm enjoying my flat white, and with flat white, we're going to talk about Kay Wayland. Kay Wayland is an interface for the KDE Plasma Desktop to integrate with the Wayland protocol, or the Wayland compositor, I guess. And Wayland does ship with, or Slackware rather, Slackware 15.0 does ship Wayland. There is the actual Wayland library on this machine. So this isn't something that just kind of like got accidentally slipped in because it came with a whole bunch of other KDE stuff. Like this is a thing you could use. I am not using Wayland right now. I'm just using traditional old boring X11 or Zorg or whatever it's called. So Wayland is the new graphic display framework or system that a lot of Linuxes are using these days. And I don't know that much about this sort of thing, so I don't have a whole lot of commentary on it. I do know that Wayland is relatively early still. I mean, it's not. It isn't. I mean, it's totally. I mean, I use it on my laptop. It's great. It's working fine. I can't. By virtue of the fact that I cannot tell what I am or am not using, I think that speaks volumes. And I've heard from people who have, maintained X, who have maintained Zorg, and or Xorg, that this was a necessary step to take towards sustainable, maintainable, graphic server. Like this had to happen. So in other words, when I say graphic server, I mean the reason that you see something on your monitor when you start your desktop. Something has to draw those pictures, right? Like something has to manage that stuff. And the thing that does that's drawing those pixels to it for a desktop, like a graphical display, a frame buffer, is what was Xorg for the longest time. And now it's very often Wayland. And there's a compatibility layer, so you can run a Wayland desktop and still run your Xorg applications and have them appear within Wayland. So you can truly have, I guess, the best of both worlds. Now, there's some concern among some people about sort of like some details about Wayland. Like, you can't, I think, I haven't looked that deep into it, but you can't, for instance, do X, well, you certainly can't do X forwarding with Wayland because Wayland isn't X, it's Wayland. So some people are kind of theoretically missing that feature. And for a long time, I theoretically was quite distressed to lose that feature and other little features, things like, I mean, honestly, I've forgotten the commands now. That's how important it was to me, apparently. But little things like where you would get like the exact dimensions of a window by listing that window's property ID and sending it to an X-related command of some sort. Little things like that, where that one time in that one situation, it was really actually quite useful, and I'd like to know that that was there. And then with Wayland, it's not there, or at least it's not there yet. The fact that on Wayland, the emphasis seems to be just use VNC. Like, just do a remote frame buffer, VNC connection. Just don't worry about it. That's good enough now. And I think more and more in the modern world, that probably is good enough now. It might be 6.5 of one and a dozen of the other, because I mean, maybe if you're strapped for bandwidth, you might find that trying to get a whole desktop onto your desktop goes pretty slow. But then again, honestly, in my experience, on low bandwidth, X forwarding hasn't gone all that fast either. So I don't know. I guess I've always had mixed experiences with X forwarding. Whether the application ended up being really, really complex, and so you'd have to spend who knows how long getting all the environment variables correct, or whether it was because the network just wasn't fast enough, or whatever. I mean, and then by the same token, though, I've had great experiences with X forwarding. Like really, really outstanding, like really, really good experiences. So it kind of it did depend, and I'm wondering, know, like, what would it really feel like to be working on a remote system over that's running Wayland? And I don't really have the experience with that right now. I haven't had the serious need to try to, like, stress test that. But it is open source software, and so I tend to assume that for a lot of this stuff, the little features are going to pop up because somebody's going to want it, and they're going to make sure that it somehow happens. So I'm not really too concerned about sort of Wayland versus Xorg, and I certainly in real life, between my laptop and my desktop, I just haven't noticed a difference, like in performance, in quality. It's just worked for me both ways. So I don't tend to think too much about either Wayland or Xorg these days. And I will say that anyone who's ever used Xorg long ago enough to remember Zorg.conf, you may have some trauma associated with Xorg. I certainly do. I have trauma associated with Xorg. So I'm a little bit eager to continue down the path of Wayland and just kind of see what it'll bring. Now, to be fair, I feel like just graphics in general on Linux have gotten better within the time I've been using it, which in the grand scheme of things isn't really that long. So I don't know how much of that is just general improvement versus Wayland improvement. And certainly with Xorg, modern Xorg, I haven't had to touch a Zorg.conf file in ages, so yeah, I'm not even sure how much that actually plays into this. Either way, I'm interested. I'm up for trying Wayland a little bit more, and certainly, like I say, on my laptop, it seems to be doing quite well. Oh yeah, and on my backup server as well. That's got Wayland on it. Okay, so next up is K-Widget add-ons, and these little widgets are like widgets in the classical sense, or at least in the software classical sense. I don't know if they were ever non-software, but yeah, widgets. These are all the little components, the cute components that you might need for building a graphical application. And they're just really, really useful things, like a K action menu, a K color combo button, a K color button, K cursor, K date combo box. Anytime you need someone to be able to just do a quick date with, you know, menu boxes, K font requester, K font size action, K LED, K message box. And it goes on. I mean, the list is just phenomenal. K-Ruler, K-Selector, K-Separator, K-Title Widget, K-Toggle, Full Screen Action. Yeah, it just goes on and on, and there's just so much stuff. Actually, that's about it. Well, I mean, I'd say that's about it. I've only read, like, five things, but, I mean, I've skipped down a list of, like, it must be well over 60 items, and then there's header files after that. So it looks deceptively long, when actually it's like, the same thing, just one of them's the header file version of the other one. But anyway, it's a bunch of useful things. It's not something that you're going to consciously use. It'll be something that a programmer includes in their application. And even then, probably sometimes not even consciously. It'll probably, you know, it's probably one of those things that gets added by default with a bunch of different templates. So really, really useful, but not necessarily something that you're going to interact with all that frequently. So let's talk about KWin. KWin is the KDE window manager, and this is like almost perplexing, this kind of granularity, the level of minutia here on Linux. I remember realizing that in the grander scheme of computer graphical design, there were this many components to a desktop. You know, there's the desktop itself, and there's the components of the desktop. But for that desktop to, for things to be quote unquote on top of that desktop, you need a window manager, because the window manager has to sort of know the bounds of that application. And then the application has to get drawn inside the window that the window manager sort of allots to that application. That's why when you launch, for instance, I don't know, Firefox or something, or Chromium or Audacity or whatever, it might come up like a quarter of your screen size, and then you drag on the window edge to make it larger. Or you click the button that says, you know, make it full screen, and it goes full screen, whatever. That's all sort of KWindow Manager, KDE Window Manager, figuring out, like, okay, what's the size of this display? What's the size of the window into which an application needs to be drawn, and then the application, based on the class that it's inheriting or that it's expanding, draws big widgets that represent the window background and a panel and a scroll bar if the contents extend past the window and so on. Really, really precise stuff. I mean, stuff that you and I never think about. And then developers, because it's such a great little framework, and it's not just KDE framework that does this, you know, I mean, certainly if you developed for GNOME, you would have the same kind of luxury. You just don't have to think about that sort of thing. And you shouldn't be thinking about those sorts of things because you don't know what people are going to do with their window managers. So that's nice that you don't have to think about that. You just know that some window management system will draw your will draw a space into which your application will be drawn. You and I usually probably don't really interact with KWin. It's something that just it runs. You know it's running because you have windows on your screen. You have things popping up when you launch applications, and you have title bars and all that other stuff. So what you the couple of commands that we actually do have are KWin underscore, and there's either underscore Wayland, KWin underscore Wayland wrapper, and KWin underscore x11. So if you're running a next.org desktop, then you would, and for whatever reason you needed to, I don't know, relaunch KWin, you could do KWin underscore x11 dash dash replace, and that kills the current running KWin and launches a new one sort of out from under you. It's kind of terrifying because you'll see your windows sort of like flicker and the title bars might disappear and so on, but just give it a moment and it all comes back as expected. So the dash dash replace just replaces an already running window manager. You can do the KWin underscore Wayland dash dash replace as well, but whether or not that works for you kind of depends. You can also do the KWin underscore Wayland underscore wrapper. Yeah, that's what it is. So that launches a little screen or a window within your physical screen on your desktop called KDE Wayland Compositor Wayland-0. And it says press right control key to grab input. Whatever that means, right? I mean, pressing the right control button, sure, whatever. Okay, so now what? Well, here's what. So you've got this empty screen. It's a black box. Doesn't mean anything to you. Doesn't seem very useful. Well, try this. Display equals, the display all capitals, equals, colon 1, space cute underscore QPA underscore platform equals Wayland. And then let's just do kwrite. Now you may notice in that little empty window, you now have a session of kwrite running. And that's running within this embedded, you know, this nested Wayland session within Xorg or whatever it is that you're running, I guess. But I've not tried this on, I've not run a Wayland desktop and then tried kwin underscore Wayland wrapper. Haven't bothered to try that. Many variations of this exercise, but there you go. That's being on Xorg and trying Wayland out from within Xorg. And of course you can do the same thing, or essentially the same thing, the other way around too. You can be on Wayland and launch all of your Xorg, based applications, as well. And in fact, you can force it to do that with on Slackware, cute underscore QPA underscore platform equals XCB. That forces an application to launch, even though you might be running the Wayland desktop as an Xorg application. So that is fun and quirky. I don't know necessarily of any reason why. Oh, by the way, to interact with the application, you that's what the little message at the top was, hold the right control key. You have to hold the right control key so that you can drill down into that Wayland wrapper interface. So anyway, what was I saying before that? Oh yeah, you can run a Wayland desktop on Slackware. It's just I have not switched over to that myself yet. I might eventually soon, but I don't know. I just took whatever it gave me when I first set it up. As I've said, Slackware and Linux in general has gotten so darned good lately that I just haven't needed to adjust that much. So I'm just really happy with how it loads onto my machine. It just kind of does what I need it to do. So that's KWin. That's all the KWin stuff, I think. And then there's KWindow System, which is the windowing system sort of API. It's inspired by X11, but not all of the functionality for X11 is provided. But this is kind of an important little subsystem to have, because KDE, might want to have the ability to know things that aren't provided by the display server by default. So things like KWindow Shadow, KWindow Shadow Tile, KWindow System, KWindow Info, KWindow Effects, and all these other things that normally, your display server isn't, your graphic server isn't going to, doesn't need to know about. Like, its job is to draw this stuff, and it might be a feature, for instance, of the Plasma Desktop or the framework, the KDE framework, to track additional features around a window. And that's what KWindow System does. I'm not sure why KWin and KWindow System aren't sort of the same, I'm sure there's a very good reason for it. They do seem very, very related to one another. I'm sure it's, like I say, I have no doubt that there is a good reason for them not to be together. And I'm not second guessing that. I am simply saying I don't know why they're not, because they do seem pretty close together. Okay, so then there's K-Word Quiz. And this is one of those that I keep thinking I should use this. This seems like a really useful application. And I really, really like that this exists. And I love that someone somewhere said, I want an application to just make flashcards, like for memory, memorization and stuff. And there wasn't anything out there, I guess. And so they created it, which I just think is brilliant. This is so cool. This is the kind of weird one-off application, like highly personalized application, that I really feel like we should have on computers now. We should just have, not this application, but I'm saying the ability to make this kind of application is something that I think anyone should be able to do. And it pains me that it is not something that anyone is able to do. I mean, anyone is technically able to do it. KDE Frameworks has proven that. It's got enough infrastructure, enough trappings around the framework and the Qt platform, or the Qt widgets and all of the things. You can do this. Someone did this. It exists. But if you look at it, it looks like an Excel spreadsheet. Key value pair, one after the other, some buttons over on the left, some buttons along the top. It's not a complex application necessarily, at least not at first. So we'll do column one, and we'll do, I don't know. I can't think of things. So how about penguin? Or no, let's do bird. Bird is one, column one. What is column two, actually, now that I'm thinking about it? Oh, it's probably the, okay. I see what we're doing. Yes, I get it. Okay. So what we'll do is we'll do 2 + 2 in column one, and we'll do 4 in column two, and then we'll do 3 + 2 in column one, and we'll do 5 in column two. So now we've got two flashcards that we've just created in this editor mode. And the modes are along the left side of the application. So right now I'm in editor, and I have two columns that I can fill out. So I've just done question, question, answer, answer. If I click on flashcard, then I get to take the quiz that I've just created. So initially it shows me my first card, which is 2 + 2. Now I can click over on the right now from top to bottom. I have a check, like verify. I've got I know, I do not know, and restart. So I'm going to click check to make sure, because I think it's 4, 2 + 2. I think that's 4. Check. 4, yes, I did know that, so I'm going to click I know. Now, after I click I know, it immediately goes to the next card. This is 3 + 2. I'm going to check. I think 3 + 2 is 6. Oh, darn, it's 5, so I do not know. So it plays a little bit of a sad sound so that I know that I got it wrong. And then I have a choice. I can either restart, or I can just repeat the errors. So now it's showing me 3 + 2 again. I think it's a 5. Check, yet 5. Okay, I do know now. And so now I've completed this whole deck without any errors, and I could either, at this point I can restart, or I could go back to the editor, I guess, and add more cards, or whatever I wanted to do. There are other modes as well. You can do, there's a multiple choice option. If you have enough entries in your editor, it can create multiple choice options for you, which seems really cool. And then there's the question and answer, like a quiz, like just a straight up quiz where you get the question from column one, and then a field where you can fill it in and see if that's correct. And I just got one right. And then I guess I still have to press check. I'm not sure. What am I doing here next? Oh, repeat errors. I guess I must have missed one. Five. There we go. Yeah, there we go. Right at the end. It's a neat little application. And there's lots of there's different modes. So you can ask it to just show you the stuff out of column one and force you to guess the stuff in column two. Where you could say, show me column two and force me to guess show me the answer, I'll guess the question, show it to me randomly, just go back and forth between which column you're showing, and so on. So, and then, like I say, there's multiple choice options, and there's quizzes, and all kinds of really cool things like that. The one thing I couldn't find myself was the ability to sort of forbid someone from going over to the editor. Like, and I know that this entire system is based on the assumption that you are the person quizzing yourself. So there's no sense that you would need to like sort of block yourself out of the thing. But I don't know. I could see that being a useful thing for someone where it's like, you know, you don't get to see. Although, you know what? I guess you could hide. No, not that one. I guess you could hide the toolbar containing. Think. Can you? Maybe not. No, I don't think you can. No, that's the wrong one. I thought main toolbar. Yeah. So I don't know. I would think that it would be useful to be able to hide the editor from your pupil. But I guess, I mean, you know, it's a local machine. It's a local quiz. I guess the audience is self-quizzing or quizzing someone. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you're trying to learn it. It's a flashcard. In real life, you can just flip over the card and look at the answer. Like, it's not, there's no vault. This is not the test. But it does seem like it could be the test because it does have such a rich ability to shake up how it shows you all of the questions and answers. And I guess that's what made me think, oh, it would be kind of cool if you could actually just make this a test system. But I guess that's not the target. That's not what they're going for. Either way, I mean, K-Word Quiz, such a nice little application. And it's so simple and so sort of obvious that's exactly the kind of weird one-off little applications, like little tiny everyday utilities that I just want everyone to be able to do that. That sort of application should be trivial now. Like that's my assertion. That's what I believe. I think computers should be advanced enough now to where if someone says, I would really like a flashcard program and I don't know where to look, well, let me just take 5 minutes to whip one up. And that's not the reality that we live in, unfortunately. That is not where computers are. I think we could be there, but that's not where we are. KWriteD. KWriteD is a write daemon for the KDE Plasma desktop. What is a write daemon? Well, it watches for messages from local users sent with write or wall. So if you've never been on a multi-user system, like a real live, lots of people on the same system, then you may not have really ever gotten to experience write or wall. I had the pleasure of actually doing that. I was like, literally, we were the hundreds of people on one system, and it was a lot of fun. And you could message people by their username using write, as long as they had that turned on. I don't remember. No, I'm almost sure that's yeah. You can activate it or deactivate it. Actually, I don't see it. Maybe I'm thinking of something else. Message, maybe? Write, or wall. Maybe it was wall. You could turn off wall, maybe? Timeout, group. Maybe it was just a custom thing. I don't know. I can't find where you can deactivate it, because I thought there was a thing where you could say, I want to opt out of this thing. I could be misremembering. Or more likely, I am probably confusing it with another similar tool. But write and wall are they're terminal applications, and they are essentially, it's a chat application of sorts. Not a very not a super useful one. I don't know why, like, if KWriteD exists, I almost don't exactly understand why, like, Copete or something couldn't just integrate that into a nicer sort of GUI and grab those messages from Write or Wall, put them into that GUI, and that way you kind of have the sense of a continuous conversation. In real life, what I found would happen is that you'd get a message from someone, but you're using that terminal in which you see the message, and so, you know, their message sort of ends up way off screen because now you've listed a folder a couple of times and so on. So it's not super convenient, at least the way that I've seen it in use. But KWrite Daemon is really nice because it will listen for those things, and it pops up a little message, you know, in K notifications, just like everything else, and it shows you what they're saying. It's really pretty neat. So yeah, KWrite Daemon, if you're on a multi-user system, and the trick is to be on a multi-user system, because even though Linux is by design multi-user, very few of us actually log into the same physical machine and have a setup where you get your own desktop on your own remote monitor and so on. So it's a vaguely advanced kind of application, not so much in how it is used, and more just kind of how you do or do not get the opportunity to actually use it. And I think last but not least in this episode is KXML GUI. Sounds really exciting if you're an XML geek like me, but it's not really all that exciting. I mean, it is, but it's very specific. It is a XML parsing or a library that takes XML and interprets it for use as a GUI menu. So it is something that you, again, would include in your source code, and you would feed this KXML GUI a series of XML tags and entries and attributes, and then it would sort out all of the different widgets that you're asking for it to create, you know, to form a menu. This, I believe, I could be slightly wrong here, but I believe this is quite useful for KDevelop, for instance, and I've seen certainly other IDEs with interface builders that do express themselves in XML. So I kind of can picture what this would do in my head. I mean, you probably can too. It's a bunch of XML. This probably has, for instance, file at the top. And then within that one, there's probably like maybe an open and a save and a quit. And then it probably has an edit back up at the top. And then within that, you probably have like a copy and a paste and a, you know, so it's just the structure of a thing. But it would also have some way, an ID maybe, or some kind of code, like a tag or something, that would also tie back into the code that you're writing, so that you know what, you know, so that your application knows when someone selects file open, who do I call? Where, what does that lead to? What function is that meant to sort of invoke? So it is useful, and I think it's probably really useful for complex applications with lots of menu entries. I have done menu entries by hand before, and I mean, and it's not just menu entries. I'm focusing on that as if though that's all it can do. That is not all it can do. It can do other things. It can do toolbar actions and you know, it can do lots of things. So I've done that stuff by hand. And it's a lot of copying and pasting, and sometimes it's a lot of, like, change that up there, and then go down here, where you're actually listening for that signal, and then once that signal is received, well, where do we forward it to, so change that lambda, or whatever, and there's a lot of, like, sort of going back and forth, whereas I'm imagining this system is probably a lot more contained. It's kind of all in there. And as I say, it interfaces, I think, if this is exactly the thing that I think it is, with KDevelop. And so you can just build your interface and not even have to really worry so much about the text of the code where it gets repetitious is what I'm trying to say. And when there is something to handle that for you, it is kind of refreshing. That's KXML GUI is what that one is. And I think that's about it for today. I mean, there's more. We're not through the K. Oh, there's only one more. Okay. Well, we gotta get the last one. The next, yeah, we're out of the K's after today. So KXML RPC client is a library providing an API to access XML RPC. And for that to be significant at all, you need to know what RPC is. RPC is a XML RPC is a protocol. It's remote procedure call RPC, and it is a form of communication to some clients, or to, you know, to between a client and a server. Very frequently over HTTP, although I imagine you could do it over other means as well. But I mean, HTTP, and you're sending requests for services along with various data types, like an array of information, which you can wrap in XML, a Boolean, which you could wrap in XML, like a Boolean tag, literally Boolean, and an array tag, array, a double, an integer, and so on. So it's a fascinating little sort of schema of XML, if you enjoy that sort of thing, which I really, really do. And it is structured in such a way that it's a very nearly kind of a, I mean, you can tell from the data types. I mean, it's kind of a programming, it's talking code through explicit sort of representations of things that code would expect to receive. Now, I've never used XML RPC that I know of. I mean, maybe I've used something that uses it, but I, for instance, I've never written anything where I thought, oh, XML RPC is the answer. So I've never used it, but I do quite like the concept. I like the idea. Maybe it's too verbose. I mean, XML is not known for not verbose, you know. I mean, that's a lot of bits, you know, a boolean bit, like a one, and you want to tag it as a boolean, so you have to tag it as angle bracket boolean close angle bracket one angle bracket boolean close bracket. I mean, that's XML, right? I mean, it is not uncommon for in XML to have a big long tag that is 2, 10, 20 times longer than your value, and that does feel weird, I admit. Like, sometimes that feels strange, but boy is it great to read. There's no question about what that is. That's not an int one, that's a boolean one. Why? Because it says so in the tag. I really, really like XML. And KXML RPC client is the way that you could use XML RPC in an application that you were writing. And it's especially significant because what uses RPC but Samba? The Samba project, probably, I imagine, because Active Directory and the SIFs and all that other stuff probably uses RPC, but Samba uses and actually ships with an application called RPC client. And so you can use that. I've never used it directly, to be honest, but you can use it, RPC client. It's a command that comes with Samba. It'll be on your Slackware machine. To communicate with some Samba thing, some entity out there. I imagine probably for troubleshooting, but maybe it's more useful than that. I don't know. I have to look into it. Point is, KXML RPC client is the library that helps KDE to talk that language. And so I imagine we're going to see, like, if we were to look at like Dolphin source code, I imagine we would see some KXML RPC client inclusion, because Dolphin, for instance, can connect to Samba shares. So I'm guessing, I haven't looked specifically for that, but that's the kind of place I would not be surprised to find it. That's it. That is everything from the K section in the KDE software series. Now, that doesn't mean we're out of KDE. There's an L section, an M, N, Q, S, W, X. So there's lots to go within KDE yet, but that's the K section. And as you can imagine, the K section in KDE is admittedly pretty long. So we are through, I guess I'll arbitrarily say, the bulk of the KDE section of Slackware software series. So thank you very much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.